Mr. Scott, reel 6. So you're marching into line. It's a nighttime changeover, I think you said, wasn't it? Which area, which point in Korea were you at that time? Where were you, in effect, where were you moving into? Where was the line?
Well, it was, I don't think we're far away from, what is the 38th parallel line now? What is it now? It's 39, I forget the number now. It was basically in that area type of thing there. And it was all, amazement, the size of the hills and that. And we thought that the daft training was, well, I should have had it, Bellaby Moor was supposed to be jungle, what have you. It was all terrain, it was hard draft, yeah. Because I mean, you were carrying all the gear. And you can imagine the night was tanking down. And then, of course, we had the old sound, welcome, first battalion, dead lightning beat the line.
This is from the Chinese?
From the Chinese. Believe you me, I thought, hey, I'm going to know this. And then later on, we found out, well, they found out all these things that have to come to that. And then it was a question of settling in, getting into line, you know, getting weapons and all this and that.
So, can you describe the position you were in? What the conditions of that position were when you first moved into it?
When we first moved in, it was all fully water, naturally, but tightened down. The section I moved into had a dugout, and it wasn't as good as what we made it eventually, every time they did their own thing, you know, what they thought was comfortable, but just a basic dugout, a couple of sandbags stuck on the top, one of you, and it wasn't a great deal of protection, yeah. And mainly it was the rain and the mud. Well, you're thinking about your weapon getting waterlogged, and God knows what, you know. If they came at you, you'd think, oh, hell, you know, it's going to seize up one of you. And especially being the first night, not knowing what it's going to come across, because they could have chosen to come in. We didn't know, because they said, oh, they'll be changing over, coming by the 6 and 3s and that. Anyway, nothing happened that night, possibly.
So the next morning, when the morning came and you actually could see the situation, what were you looking at?
What I call no man's land, a valley.
So you were on the hill?
On the hill, yeah. Your trench was on the forward slopes, and your slope at the back, well, you might have your ammunition or whatever at the back, you know, a certain amount. And it was just, well, I would say bleak, you know, there was nothing spectacular.
And the Italian, the Chinese, where were they in relation to yourself?
The section where I was in, be 600 or 700 yards away.
And across the valley again, and they were on a hill at the other side.
The valley, yeah.
But you couldn't see, could you see anything?
The first couple of days was getting really settled in, making sure your position, gun position, were on, bumming your living accommodations. They came fourth, never mind. Yeah, you check your gun positions, what you're going to details, whatever. Sergeant Major had us all together, each section, whatever. Tell me what your judges were going to be. There'd be standard patrols, that'd be like listener patrols, fighting patrols, etc., which we'd become to do later on. And basically, the first 3 or 4 days was getting settled in and making sure your base was secure. Yeah. And of course,
so pretty hard work then, was it for you?
Digging
and what have you.
You were either extending a trench or maybe it collapsed with a bit of rain or what have you, maybe it's sealed, what have you. But basically the trench had naturally already been dug. But you still trying to improve or repair, whatever, things like that. Good. And then it was a question of the old static warfare. Mm.
How deep then were the trenches?
It seems a lot deeper than ours. Mind you, that photograph I'm just thinking I'd taken, I'm just over 5 foot five, so they were good 6 foot, 7 foot deep. Yeah.
And this had a firing step, did they, for you to stand on?
We had what we call a fixed line gun. You had a blend gun on a fixed line, and that was targeted on what you thought the chiefs would be in the paper movement. And you, if you were walking past there, you would fire the burst off. The off chance that it hit somebody, and then but if you went past the magazine was empty, there was also a box full of magazines You took one out and put it in. And when we tried you, if you'd gone there and it was an empty magazine, you went straight, hey, what's going on here? Get that topped up type of thing. And also, I think it was the third RAR, who stayed with us, had a battery machine gun. It was the old type, I know. Three blokes, size, I think, a corporate plant, and they stayed with them. And they were attached to our platoon on the right hand side. And that's all they did, was fixed line firing.
And these were Australians, were they?
These were Australians, yeah, attached to us. They were left there with a gun.
And you said you were deepening and improving the trench line, and these were just like First World War trenches.
If it was on video, you could see that photo of me taken. I'm there, and the sort of above me, good foot above me, the trench. Nighttime, they'd have an old cloth where they could find over the door, so if you had a light on in there, it didn't show anything like that. And at times the tent was all up there. Mm-hmm. Or either you punch where you came, you stuck them down, you know, to stop light getting out.
The dugouts themselves, how did you improve those to make them more livable?
Well, you didn't improve them really. You couldn't do anything with the wall. All you did for a bed, you found any old bits of timber. We were lucky, we found some old like stakes that about wire was going through. And we utilised them. We got some wire off the signals blocks and made like an old bedstead type of thing. And just laid on that. That was your bed. The eating in the dugout was an old shell casing, sand or whatever we could, mud, put in the bottom of it, jerry can with diesel. Well, this is really primitive, you know. And a drip feed in the shell, you lit that, and that was your heating in the dugout. And the smell of the day was stunky out, but you had to put up with it. That was my dugout. I don't know what it was, Nick. That's what we did. And you could only do that at night time, basically, because the smoke would always get out somehow, and it would say, you know, say, there's somebody there. So he couldn't do much some of the day, movement-wise, because they were crafty devils, they seems. They were very good with the mortars. At least we found they were. Very accurate. Luckily they didn't hit very good at the time. They were very good, it seems, I'll say that. The other thing about our found the trench, the rats. Now, not so long ago, we had a letter from the Americans asking us if we'd had any problems. You know these diseases we're having, they're coming up with, if we'd had any problems with them. Well, I couldn't say that I was bitten or anything like that. But some of us may have been not realised that they were dangerous over the years, type of thing, developed until years after. And they were trying to find out. The Americans, a lot of their lads had got this brain disease to them. That.
Through the rats, these
through these rats, yeah.
And there were many of them, obviously.
Well, I put it there. I saw quite a few. And Barry, he said, I'm sick of these, he said. And one night, because he was sick of them. Yeah.
I was going to ask you, how did you try to keep them down? How did you, if you could keep them? You didn't have rat hunting parties organised.
That wouldn't have been allowed. Yeah, you just put up with it basically. Yeah.
And did they disturb you in your sleep or anything like that? Were they running around?
Well. I'm only speaking for myself in my dugout. I mean, other lads went on and experienced this and that. But one night, Barry, he jumped up and said, what the hell's that? And it was cutting around the bed and got over the top of him and woke him up. Yeah. But there was I think the wrong impression was created when they first said jungle, Alex, and that. And you saw the hills and I thought, well, where did they get the jungle saying from? I couldn't understand it. Yeah. Well, they got the wrong end of the stick at the war office, and it was a jungle. We didn't know.
How did you feed in the trench lines?
What was the name for it? The pack. British Army pack, I think there was a name for it. It was basic corn dog and the old corned beef and whatever.
Yeah, and
hard. Was that the American? I think it was
That was the Americans when they did the K-Pack.
We got the base, you know, the army. It was corned beef with the usual. And I think it was a bit of bacon, I'm not quite sure. Because what happened with us, we started to get a lot of the K-Pack, the Yanks come in, took over and got a lot of their stuff. And it put ours in the shade. You got blocks of jelly. Well, they never did. I mean, a drove getting jelly for the sweet. Blocks of jelly, chocolate, Camel cigarettes, or Chesterfields, or Lucky Strike, you know, whatever was in the pack. There was everything in it. Self-heating tins and what have you, which we only got now and again. Yeah, self-heating tins. We took over, we moved to another section, took it over from some Yanks. No, sorry, the Yanks were coming in to take over from us. And big top sergeant come in, man dug out, he said, hey guy, where do you get the ice cream from? Well, just knocked back. Brian, when he came to call me, he said, ice cream? He used a foul language, you know. I wonder if he did, yeah. The top sergeant wasn't very happy. So, a couple of days later, when we'd moved out, they took over then. It was 2 weeks in and 2 weeks out, if I remember rightly. In the line, 2 weeks out. And that was when he turned it anyway. It was a bit warm on that lake, you know. But that was before the winter really came in.
This is the autumn, isn't it? The autumn sometimes.
Well, it's got the first couple of months there, September, October, November, and it was getting a bit cold. But then, when the snow started coming on and the frost and that, then we realised we were in for it. Yeah.
Whereabouts then, was the, for example, company headquarters in relation to your own section?
Well, the company headquarters weren't very far away. They were at the rear of the hill, actually. See at the bottom of the hill, I mean, the hill's buried in height. 355, which I never got onto. Luckily or unluckily, because that was a hell of a good position to hold for observation and that. You have different sized hills, as I say. And it was, the terrain was different sometimes. Sometimes the soil would be claggy and sticky, you know, and others it was quite easy to move out on. But that was before the snows and that came.
Were your dugouts, were these the hutches that they refer to in the information?
The hutches.
The hutches. And these were your own personal dugouts, were
yeah,
they?
The hutches, yeah, that was a nickname for them. Yeah.
And they had cover on the top for...
On the top, yeah, sandbags or whatever. You utilised some of them cut trees. But there wasn't a lot of trees because once we were in, there'd been a lot of napalm bombs dropped and the trees were all scorched and that, you know. I think I have a photograph there with the Bren guns. You can see them all at the back of us, all just like branches, twigs, you know, no foliage or anything, just burnt off. And then they were on the rear slopes right behind, because that's where you come and clean your weapons and whatever.
What about trench discipline? What did the, your officers insist, and your NCOs insist of in the trenches? Keeping them clean and so on.
I think I would say, in my opinion, that our officers, you know, they need to do because this one was great. We didn't need talent. We looked after our roaches correctly, invested in ability and everything. That's my opinion. The toilets were dug in the hole, and it was made of a square box. This was out the line, and he used that as a lid. And the urinal was an old shell case stuck in the soil, and he used that. It was always well away from the lines. This was out of the lines. In the lines, well, you dug one at the rear, and at the rear of the nail, and do the same thing there. But I'd say this, I don't think, in my opinion, that there's any worries about discipline out there. But it was guards over time anyway.
And I'm thinking in terms of empty tins and packages and whatever.
That was taken out of the sacks or whatever. There was other, I'll say this, in our section anyway, in our patrol area, there was no danger about that.
I think the battalion had a reputation for clean trenches and good trenches.
It was good, yeah. Well, it would be detrimental to himself. If you had tin cans pile up, well, no good.
Yeah. Where did you keep your ammunition and your grenades, etc.?
They were
in the dugout with you, yeah.
The only grenade which we didn't like at carry, in fact, to be quite honest, I think I'm not speaking for myself this way, I used to get rid of mine because the phosphorus grenades. Mm-hmm. Because when the chiefs found these on you, they used to pull the pin. And you can imagine what a thing that would be, yeah. So we just shot them, kept the old, what they call it, the 36, the grenade, mm-hmm.
The old Mills.
The old Mills, mm-hmm. Used them. That was when Paul Wilkie Hall, I think he got killed. You know what happened actually? They were cleaning grenades. One went off accident or something, that's how he was killed. Yeah.
The trenches you've described and the dugouts, was the position wired in? Did you have wire in front of you?
Oh yes, it was all wired. Minefield as well. Yeah. Which would come to and at night time you'd track out if you went up on a standard patrol with white tape so you could see your way out and come back in. That tape took you through the minefield.
How high was the wire and how deep?
Oh, it wasn't elaborate like you can get now. I'd say basic, you just cut a foot high and that, you know. But it must have been strongest because I didn't actually see any, but I reckon some of the other battalions out there, when the teams came in, they used to come in the hordes, and you could mow them down, and they'd climb over the top of them up there. And that's where this also happened. They used to take the dead away. And if you would think you were fighting ghosts, folks used to say, well, other battalions were out there before, used to say, you know you shot them, bloody damn, and it was...
Clear them off.
Got rid of them, and it made you psychological. But we've shown the people last night, or what, you know, because they expect to see the evidence. Yeah, and that's what they were very cute then. I went on to one standard patrol.
We'll come to standing patrols and so on. That. At the moment, I just want to get a picture of the position you were in and in your own normal daily life, really, in the line. Yeah. Duties and so forth. What duties would you get?
Well, you'd be observation all the time, basically, looking out for them, coming and all. But there wasn't much moments all the day, you only come at night time. But at the same time, you have to still keep an eye open for any movement, because sometimes you see, there's a trench being dug there, or you see, there'd be snows on the ground then, and you could see the brown soil newly dug. And you had to go back and report the sergeant, and he'd bring an intelligence section or something like that to try and find out what's going on. Are they bringing heavy reinforcements up that way, or is it just a ruse? That's basically what you were doing all the time, keeping an eye up through the day, and then you were standing by at night time. You stood till all night, from, I would say, dawn to dusk.
So essentially it was a lot of activity at night.
The activity was always at night time.
And this include all the digging and so forth at night time?
Through the daytime, you didn't dare show yourself, because they were watching you, and that's the same as we were watching them. And as I say, they were clever at the old mortars.
They would mortar you if they saw movement.
They used to call it stonking. If they saw movement, it would be over, like a flash. And they were very good at lobbing them over in the back. The one thing that was great about that, it seems, I wouldn't say anything else. Because I used to say to my mate, Barry, I said, why don't you use good as him? But he had his mortar. Yeah.
How did they arrange things? So, as you say, if during the day you were relatively inactive, except up for observation, did you get time then to sleep and rest during the day because you're going to be working at night?
We used to sleep and look after your weapons. Your weapons are clean all the time. Yeah, you try to when the weather wasn't being cold, you try to keep your weapons hot. You know, you wrap them up with cloth and whatever, you know, to keep them at least weighted.
Were you inspected regularly?
Oh, yes. I think it was the size of Aberdeen. I'm sure it was. If the two sides used to come along, and they all, you would really, not for a bull, you know, but the weapons and that were always checked. Let's have a look at your, you know, coming on this thing, going up, you know, that's okay, that, things like that. Or is your magazines fitting in all right? Because sometimes your magazines just get up to the end and they wouldn't go in. You know, and so you, to make sure that every magazine would go in before you filled it. We used to the section might have had different things, but that was section we don't make sure.
And platoon officer, he would keep an eye on you, check on you. Who was that again?
Well, Paddock was the one who went to the attack. But the one that I can remember vividly was called Constantine. And he got wounded. And I think, if I remember, there was only one mortar landed that one night or something like that. And because he just visited us, checking, coming out for that night, the nightly check, going down the post, because we all stood to. And he just left us. We had the crew, and it was him, we got it in his back. And all I can remember is him, we ran out, but some of that's already got to him, and he was off in the jeep, Hamlin's jeep. And I didn't see that, well, I thought I'd had it, you know. And I saw that gentleman, I went to the Clevedon Hospital, a private hospital, 1986, something like that. And I seen this person coming through the door. And he looked at me, and I looked at him. We both recognised each other straight away. It was him. Yeah. He said, "Now, Scott, how you doing?" I said, "No, sir, you know, the usual, yeah." And he was a member of the Constantine shipping family, which is defunct now. But he was, he may still be there, he's not. But they've changed into a warehousing. And he was working at Stockton somewhere there. But a real good natter. But I've never seen him again since. Yeah. So that just shows how your lifetime, yeah. He's
company commander, was that Donoghue in your company?
Donoghue.
And did he come round regularly to check you?
Yes, he'd come round, yes. He was very strict in Berlin, but he was a soldier. He was a soldier's soldier in Korea, as far as I'm concerned, anyway.
And what's a soldier's soldier in an officer?
Berlin respected, yeah. He didn't give you the bull like he did in Berlin. He wanted to be the smartest company in Berlin, and we were proud to be it. But in my opinion, he was a good chap for us. And he proved it because he went on a patrol, checked the minefield, and he got killed.
And I think you said Jeffries was battalion commander. Did he come round regularly?
Well, I would like to say, he might have done, but I never seen a lot of him, put it that way. But we knew he was there, type of thing. I mean, he might have come round when we were doing something, a drug up, something like that, you know. But, I can't say I've seen him a lot. I know, remember, he was a tall chap. That's about all I can remember of, you know. Didn't see him.
Did you form an opinion about him as a soldier, did you?
Well, from what I saw him and what I've heard of him, he was a good commander who could have had for the battalion. He had a good reputation before he came there. Yeah. But I can't say I've seen a lot of him. As I say, I might have missed him days when he's coming on his tools or whatever. Yeah. And when he went to Egypt, he said you get there. A good new replacement, Lieutenant Colonel Jeffries, who were picked him up on the way out.
As most of the officers and some of the senior ranks were Second World War men, weren't they? They'd been through the Second World War.
He was Second World War, yes. Donoghue. But he had only two come across.
That's right, in your own unit.
Because most of the second lieutenants were all same as us, Women's National Service, or joined on as a regular stint, but just lately, you know, that time, first was.
You mentioned that if a man got wounded, you mentioned that a jeep took them out. The jeep ambulances that were there with you. Where was the regimental aid post again in relation to the forward positions?
Well, regimental aid post, that was. I would say half a mile to a mile back roughly, just going that way. And people say, "Oh, I've got a cushion over here, headquarters." You know, it was a little bull, you know, but everybody played a part.
Do you remember who the MO was with the battalion?
No, I can't tell you.
And the padre, do you remember?
No, I don't remember him either.
He didn't come near you, did he? You didn't see much of him?
There was a church made there by the lads. We had a shell case, there's a photograph somewhere in existence, and it's marvellous. We went the first time, we went up the line to use it. They weren't forced to, not like separated in Berlin. But we went down, the three of us, our nickname was Three Musketeers, like roast up together, like, you know, it's mates. And it was marvellous what they'd done. When he went inside, like an old hoods outside, but the lads who don't know did it, but all placed them. You felt like you were in a church. Marvellous shell cases, and what was marvellous to see. Yeah.
But you say it wasn't compulsory. You went to church,
you went to a church service.
It
was there for you if you want to use it, yeah. And out the line, this is a bit of a laugh, this concert time, but outside the Nuffy, that was out behind the line this time, and they come along and they said, looks as though you were free of skin. I said, how did he get there? No, this is the type of person to wear. I said, I was skinned. He said, how much do you want? He said, I just enough to get a drink. He gave us 30 bath vouchers. Yeah. I still owe him that money. And to that day, when he came in the hospital, I remembered him. He said, oh, no, I said, we'll call that dead paid. Yeah. Now, that's the type of officer where they mucked in the same way you.
Did you, I should have asked you this when we're talking about the cooking. Did you have to cook for your own little section, or was it done through a company cookhouse?
The company cookhouse, you had to come up the back of the line and bring it up. Yeah.
And was it a hot meal delivered at night when they could move around easier?
Yeah.
And during the day, your meals would be just what you had with you?
Have you got a bottle of beer? You took it with you. You said to put it in the vest in, because it was smart enough, and put it on top of the shelter, throw it down, it was frozen solid.
Was there a canteen in the battalion area?
When you went out the line.
Like Naffy type thing. But that was out the line, yeah. That was
nothing,
out the line.
Nothing there. There was a small Naffy, but it wasn't. Anything like that. Yeah.
I believe you said that you stood two on a morning, is that correct? Was a stand to?
You stood. You first of all, let me get it right. I can't. You stood to all the night, then you stood down after dawn. Dusk to dawn. You stood, and then you did the basics, you know, you cleaned your dugout out and your weapons and everything like that. So basically, your mind was occupied one way or another. Or even if you're a bit of that there, cleaning grenades or whatever, you know, you're doing something.
Then presume there was a stand to in the evening again. Dusk.
And that's all it was. It was the old static warfare. Yeah.
So that would that be when a company was in the front line position?
Yes.
Presumably then there would be companies in reserve, were they? And did they switch around?
Support. Well, no, they were nearly all in the line. You had a support company which went in line, but they had the 4.5 mortars where it was. They were the support company on behind you. And they might have I can't remember if they had any tank guns out there, I can't remember. Well, we did have one in our position, a Centurion tank dug in as a static gun because they couldn't move it, it was muddy and whatever. And then we just if we thought the ships were coming up by the same movement, they'd open a few shells into them. Yeah.
That must have attracted Chinese retaliation on the tank position.
Yeah, well, they'd keep moving them. Yeah. They'd maybe stay a couple of days, you know. Find up a good few rounds and then move along a little bit. Oh, we were up there in the dodges like them, but not normal static warfare, I suppose. You couldn't stop in the one position if you give it away, you would ask for trouble. Yeah. Where we were, we were there for you 2 weeks in and 2 weeks out, you got no option. Yeah.
And you mentioned your rifles, Bren guns, of course.
Yeah.
Sten guns, you said?
The Sten gun, yeah. The Sten gun to me was a terrible weapon. If you just accidentally got in the butt, the rounds would go off. Yeah. Or if you knocked it against somebody, it might knock the other time, it would go off. And on an occasion, in the body that came going back to Barry, he walked out the dugout and he put his Sten gun down near the dugout door. He didn't drop it and it just went off. Look, probably about three rounds off. Luckily, there was nobody there. Yeah. It was a very temperamental weapon. Yeah.